Ist es schon soweit? Komm in Weihnachtsstimmung mit Action. Wir haben alles, was du für die schönste Zeit des Jahres brauchst. Zum Beispiel goldfarbenes Besteck, verschiedene Varianten, nur 99 Cent. Und eine Lichterkette, 2 Meter, nur 77 Cent. Lass die Vorfreude beginnen. Komm in eine unserer Filialen und entdecke die besten Weihnachtsartikel zum kleinsten Preis. Action. Kleine Preise, große Freude.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, and joining me today is a special guest. His name is David Brevik, and you may know him as one of the original creators of Diablo. He co-founded Blizzard North, I think, in the early 1990s. Is that right, David?
Yeah, that's correct. In 1993 is when we started, something like that.
Which is amazing. Went on to make Diablo 2 and eventually helped start Flagship Studios. These days, he works for Gazillion, where he's working on Marvel Heroes, which is a superhero-focused version of Diablo, or I guess you could say the action RPG genre. And with Avengers 2 coming up pretty soon, I thought I would have David on the show to talk a little bit about how Marvel Heroes is going, and also, like, let's delve a little bit into the past. But David, Marvel Heroes 2015, you've kind of really revamped the game a lot since it was originally launched. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have. It's changed considerably since the launch. We have done a lot to the gameplay. We've made it a better actual gaming experience. We've added a lot of depth, a lot of complexity, a lot of heroes. We've kind of tuned things up and made a much more enjoyable experience. We've made people would consider to be a more fair free to play model. So much has changed. It's hard to even describe. It's a very, very different game than when it first came out. When it came out, it wasn't well received. It wasn't very good, and we buckled down and made as many changes as we possibly could to really improve it, and we were able to improve our Metacritic score from a 58 to an 81. So that was a really big jump for us, and it's, you know, that was last summer really that we started getting the re-reviews, and I think that's an even better game today. So I think that it keeps getting better and better.
A lot of people who initially reviewed Marvel Heroes 2015 said that they felt that it launched too early. What happened? Can you shed some light onto what happened there?
Sure. It's a tale that you hear often, but it's difficult to make games at all. But this is no different than a lot of stories, which is that Gazillion started out. I came here to be the creative director on Marvel Heroes, but now I'm the CEO of the company. So a lot had to change in that time. We had a bunch of different projects and some investors in the actual organization. And it had been years and years that they had been working on things. And then stuff started coming out and it was not performing well. And the investors were getting impatient. And it was like, you know, we needed to release something. And we just didn't have the kind of time and money that we really wanted to finish the game that we thought that we could make. And so it came out, and, you know, sometimes you have to do these things, put them out before they're really ready. And I think our biggest mistake really was that we didn't label it as a beta, which really wouldn't have cost us anything to label it as a beta. It would have been much more forgiving. And then once we felt the game was in better shape, we could have taken the beta tag off, and then people would have reviewed it, and we could have had this kind of live public, but you could still pay beta period, and that would afford us a lot more leniency. Hindsight's 2020, but you know, I'm sure that now we come out with features, big features that have been long in development or something like that. We'll even put little beta labels on that particular feature, and so we kind of learned how to manage that in a live service game, which we hadn't really had much experience doing.
It's interesting that you talk about labeling, because you're touching on kind of an issue in gaming in general, where you have a lot of developers who will, you know, we have early access these days, we have betas, that sort of thing, and a lot of users have become kind of confused by, well, is this meant to be a final product? Are you trying to get me to pay money for something that's unfinished? How do you tread that kind of nebulous territory with a game like Marvel Heroes?
Yeah, it is a growing period for the industry in general, and I think for consumers, there are going to be stories where people are going to feel like they got ripped off because they invested in something and it never, you know, the developer didn't have the time or didn't patch it or whatever, abandoned the project, whatever it is. And then there'll be other stories where they paid and they felt like they got good value out of it. And so I don't know if there is really a right answer or a wrong answer in these kind of situations. Labeling is very important, but I think that really you're kind of seeing the underbelly, the guts of how games are developed and how difficult it is. And the consumers are kind of seeing that. I don't know if there's a right answer. That people just have to be really, really kind of understand what it is that they're buying and what they're getting into and what the expectations are. They have to do a little bit more homework when it comes to buying something as an early access or a beta, and realize that there's inherent risk in something like that, even Kickstarter. And it may not end up being exactly what developers have promised, because it's really, really difficult to deliver on promises for a project that may take, let's say, several years. Not only that, but better ideas or better choices may come up that contradict something that you may have said in the past. Oh, we tried this and it just really wasn't that fun or that great, or we couldn't get it working or whatever. And so as long as consumers understand what they're getting into, I think, in the clear messaging, then I think it's okay. But again, the consumer really needs to pay attention to what it is that they are buying and be wary of promises, because not all the time they're going to come true.
So Marvel Heroes, for people that don't know, is, as I already mentioned, is an action RPG with a heavy online component. You're playing co-op with a large number of people. You're going on what could potentially be characterized as raids against familiar kind of Marvel villains and that sort of thing. And it seems like a really natural fit, or that kind of genre seems like a real natural fit for the superhero genre, because you're creating, you're controlling, you know, these characters with really defined and interesting powers. But one thing that I've kind of noticed is that with a game like Marvel Heroes, you just have such a wide array of characters that you need to put in. That must be a lot harder than, say, a game like Diablo 2, where you're creating just a handful of really well-defined and incredibly well-balanced classes.
Yeah, it's definitely a very different model than any other action RPG that I've ever worked on, or I've ever even heard of, because it's basically we're releasing a character class a month. And there really isn't another game that does this kind of thing. And the characters have, I don't know, like 25 different skills, and they can have radically different gameplay. For instance, a few months ago, we released Rogue. Rogue in the Marvel Universe steals powers from other characters, absorbs their powers, and can use them. And that's exactly what she does in our game. She can go around, she can touch other heroes and take a power from them, from any hero or villain in the game, and make them her own permanently. And she has, I don't know, 24 slots, I believe, or something like that, 12 slots. Anyway, a lot of different powers that she can steal, and they're permanent. She gets permanent access to these things by kind of picking and choosing your own power set to deal with. You can play her as a melee character, or as a ranged character, or as a whatever you want, because she can go and kind of pick and choose her skills. That's a very different kind of character class than it's ever existed in an action RPG. We'll do that 1 month, and then the next month it'll be somebody that is really movement based, and they run around all the time, and like Juggernaut, and he's got a momentum bar, and the faster he moves, you know. Then we'll do another character that's Punisher. And Punisher has an ammo clip, and so his resource, you have to like refill his ammo, and you know, how big of an ammo clip he has, and like, you know, so there's like this completely different mechanic between each one of the characters. So they're not, it is, I think Whether or not we well balance them, that may be another story. But you know, I think that you know, having this variety of gameplay is really something unique to this game that really separates it from any other action RPG out there. And it's a very different experience and a very different thing for us. And it's great for the audience because they can try something new all the time and find new ways to enjoy the game through a different playstyle.
Who's your favorite character? And I don't mean like who's your favorite hero, because we all know that Iron Man is the best hero, but I mean, which character does the best job in your mind of capturing the essence of that character in the game while also being mechanically interesting?
Wow, that's a great question. I'm not really sure if I can label it down to one. My main characters that I play are Rocket Raccoon, which I really enjoy. I think he's super fun. He's got Groot with him. Groot goes out there and kind of tanks, and Rocket shoots back, you know, sits back with his guns and shoots things. So mechanically, it's very much like the movie where Groot and him are companions and they're buddies, and Groot's the muscle and he's the kind of engineering wizard, and he, you know, he has the guns, the big guns. And so there's like there's definitely that sense. You get with their dialogue and the way that they act towards other characters and the things that they say in the game really kind of captures their essence. And I think we did a really good job with Rocket Raccoon. I also think that we did a really good job with Hulk. He recently had a review where he changed kind of his mechanics some. That's another thing that we do. We actually update older characters as well and give them new powers and kind of refresh them as well. So he just had his big review, and I think that he really feels awesome to play. He's smashing all over the place. He's jumping. He's, you know, as he gets more and more angry, as he do more stuff, as he gets hit, as he punches things, gets more and more angry, and then you get this maximum anger and trigger all these effects. And so I feel like he really captures that. And I also play a lot of X-23, and she's quick, slashing, moves rapidly, has a lot of kind of brutal strike, which is our kind of crit of a crit. She has a high brutal strike chances, and so lots of kind of a build that I play is a bleeding build where she puts on dots, bleeding dots for people. And so I think that a lot of the essence of the characters is really put into the design that we have, as well as that combined with their actual lines and the way they deliver it and their costumes. It makes them feel like the character that they're supposed to feel like.
Marvel Heroes is obviously designed for a wider audience, but you come from a background of designing for, I would say, a dedicated niche. I mean, the original Diablo had its roots in Rogue and that kind of genre. How do you balance kind of that desire to have a modicum of depth while still being able to draw in the kind of people who would deliberately go looking for a Marvel, like, action RPG?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we try and take game concepts that we are familiar with from more hardcore games, my own experiences, things I would like to see, and kind of give them a light twist, make it as simple as possible and keep the essence of what we're trying to do the same, but make it, I guess, a little lighter than it, you know, it doesn't have to be so stats nerdy that it gets down into the depths of, you know, where I think things become really hardcore, where there's maybe infinite choices on things. And, you know, we try and limit that so that it addresses a more wide audience. That's something that we've always done, even with Diablo. You know, when people were making RPGs back then, a lot of the games would be, okay, you go into the room and now you have to hit one key to to take your sword out of the sheath, and then another key to slash it, and another key to parry, and you know, it was really, really complicated. Oh, I forgot to take my sword out. I forgot to say hail or whatever. You know, there's like it was like these multiple steps. And when we came out with Diablo, we said, hey, we want to take. I don't want to have to go through all those steps. I don't have to press seven keys to take out my sword and decide what I'm going to do. I just want to click on the damn thing and club it over the head. So I feel like, you know, distilling what is the fun out of these steps, multi-steps, really makes it a wider audience game. And we try to do the same with any kind of design task that we have. We just put in, for instance, kind of an influence system, which is a reputation system. The heroes already have reputations, so we wanted to go with something that was similar to what you would see in other MMOs. And so we found a user-friendly way to make sure that people aren't feeling like it's really grindy, but it gives them something to do and strive for, and influence makes a lot more sense. And we were really friendly about the way we did it, where you just have to do one quest a week, and that gives you half of what you need for, you know, on your weekly cap and things like that. It's decisions like that, I think, that you know, the day-to-day decisions of how grindy or how stats oriented you're going to be that makes something lighter or heavier.
How's the end game content coming along?
You know, when we launched, it was extremely thin, but now I think now with, you know, a year and a half, almost 2 years later now, it's quite robust. There are so many things to do. It's a little bit overwhelming. We have a lot of different. We have raids. We have kind of these cosmic modes, which, you know, are extremely difficult, and they drop special things. We have a wave defense game, two actually wave defense game modes, one for two people, one for five, where the waves get harder and harder, but the rewards get better and better over time. We also have, you know, kind of a casual end game mode where you can go around Manhattan for, you can stay in there forever. It's an endless mode where just waves of guys come in and you battle them. There are 10 other people in the zone that you work with, and you kind of get together to defeat when there's a boss wave or something like that. So there's different levels of the story mission. I mean, you have heroic and super heroic, normal heroic and super heroic versions of difficulty versions of the story. So there's lots of ways to not only get to the level cap, but once you're at the level cap, there's tons of items to look for. Each hero has five unique items. There's special items you can buy with different in-game currencies. There's rune words to make. There's artifacts. There's trading. There's a whole bunch of things that you can do. So I feel that once you get to the level cap, there's a wide variety of things to do that you can do for many, many hours. And many of the things I play a lot, and I'm not even close to maxing out a lot of the things that I could be doing. And it's hard to keep up as well, leveling a character to 60 every month, and making them outfitted and stuff is no easy task. We have, and so it's really almost impossible to keep up with the kind of the pace of the content, which is fun.
Can I guess who the most popular character is?
Sure, you can.
Iron Man.
You might be right, but you're wrong.
Rocket Raccoon.
Maybe he should be. I'm not saying he should or should not be. I can see where you're coming from. But no, stats show that it's not.
Oh, interesting.
I know. Must be some bug in our stats.
That's weird. Well, Rocket Raccoon's okay too. I'd say that he's number two. And Groot's all right. Gosh, okay, if it's not Iron Man, it can't be Captain America. Do you have Spider-Man in your game?
We do.
It has to be Spider-Man, right?
No.
It's not Spider-Man? All
See,
right.
because it's a little bit of a tough metric to understand, because it is a free-to-play game, and we get so many people that come in, and Spider-Man and Iron Man aren't available as one of your starting guys that you can play, and so it skews the stats with the people that get the most popular are the ones that you can start out as being when you first start the game. So we're heavily skewed towards that list of people that you can start as.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. But so who's the most unexpected popular character?
Storm.
Storm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Storm has a fan base.
Oh, Storm has a huge fan base, but you wouldn't think that she's the second most popular character in the game.
Huh. Wow, yeah, that is really interesting. Look, you might just have a lot of girls who are excited to have a female character.
Yeah.
So, free to play. Obviously a touchy subject, very touchy subject with our readership.
Sure.
You guys have done a lot of, you guys have really overhauled the system since launch. Could you kind of elaborate on that and kind of your thinking behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. It has been overhauled quite a bit. You know, some of the complaints that we got at the beginning were, "Oh my God, heroes cost $20," everything was so expensive, and so it, not only did it cost a lot of money, but they didn't feel like people didn't feel like they were getting their money's worth, and it's ridiculous. Turns out that we did have, I think, two characters that were $20, but most of them were not. Most of them were around $10. So we instantly got kind of labeled as this greedy MMO, you know, greedy free-to-play game, which, you know, fair or not fair, there were characters that were $20. Anyway, we realized that that was a mistake, and so we reduced prices quite a bit. Now, you know, I don't think there is a hero that's over, I don't know, $12 or $13 or something like that. Most of them are cheaper, $7 or so, I'd say, somewhere right around there. And as well as costumes, we greatly reduced the prices on those. And most of the prices are, you know, around $9 or something like that for a costume. But one of the biggest changes that we made was the way that you acquire the heroes. In the beginning, the way that you got and unlocked new heroes was through a random drop in the game. So as you played, you might get lucky and Rocket Raccoon dropped and now I get to play him and you'd be very happy. But we had sort of a couple different tales that came out of this after a short period of time. You had the person that played hundreds of hours and was just didn't make their prayers to the RNGesus correctly and didn't get anything. And then you had the players that, and so they were very sad. I've been playing for 100 hours and, you know, I didn't get anything. And then you had the player that, I've been playing for 50 hours and I've had 3 drops. But unfortunately, those weren't the 3 that I was really even interested in either, right? You know, I whatever characters I got, those I was really looking forward to playing Iron Man, like everybody should be, and that wasn't what was dropping for me. So we had kind of these bad situations, feel bads out of pretty much the entire audience. So we decided to change the way that you can get the items that you buy in the game. And that was through this, what we came up with, this Eterni Splinter system. And what this does is that as you play, these Eterni Splinters drop and you collect them. And then after you've collected a certain amount of them, a couple hundred, you can go and buy the hero that you want. And they drop at a kind of a regular pace. And so as you play, you get to earn the hero that you want and you can buy the particular ones that you want. Rather than having, you know, luck be the decider. And that made a massive change in the perception of what was considered to be fair microtrans or fair, you know, free-to-play game. You could play the game and earn what you wanted, or you can kind of shortcut by buying the things that you wanted. So We greatly reduced prices, and we made a new way that people could earn the things to buy, which was through this Attorney Splinter system. And since then, people really, and the game's really taken off, and people really appreciate that they can play the game truly for free the entire way through, never have to pay for anything. There are ways to get all sorts of stuff. Plus, we give stuff away all the time. There are daily rewards for logging in. We have little events, and we give out gifts, and we send people newsletters with codes to give them stuff. Everything from boosts to costumes to little celebration for our anniversary. We had a cake, and you open it up, and bam, there's a bunch of experience that comes out and unique items. And, you know, so there's all sorts of fun things that we give away all the time. We have these events running every week, literally every week. And so with that, we give away a lot, as well as you can earn everything in the game by just playing. So I think that really changed our perception. We lowered prices at all, and we don't hear any complaints about the model anymore. And people think it's very, very fair.
So you can theoretically unlock every hero just by playing.
Correct.
So there is premium content, but it's mostly a matter of I want to unlock this right now, so I'm going to spend some money.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a kind of a time versus patience thing more than anything else, right? You know, some people are like, I'd rather save my splinters for whatever other thing, and I'm just going to buy this particular one because I want to play them right now or whatever.
Were you kind of like, when you were creating Marvel Heroes, was a free-to-play kind of microtransaction system kind of mandated, and you were feeling your way slowly toward what works?
I wouldn't say it's mandated. This is something that I've wanted to do for a while. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to make a free-to-play game as a service game. I mean, that's the reason that and then to combine it with a, you know, that was kind of the next game for me. That was something I wanted to do. And then the opportunity arose to make it a Marvel game, which I'm a huge Marvel nut. So it was, oh yeah, this is the dream come true. So that was the next kind of game. That's the thing that interests me the most, is making an online persistent, you know, free-to-play game was the thing that I wanted to make next. So it wasn't really mandated by anybody, but it was obviously a trend in the industry where people were, you know, MMOs in general were converting from subscription to free-to-play, and it was starting to really take hold. And there was other ways that people were seeing a lot of success. This is around the time of the rise of Zynga, for example, and their free-to-play model. And then since then, we've seen mobile and a lot of free-to-play stuff on mobile. All those, whether or not they're fair and how they're, you know, their models or whatever, they're a different type of free-to-play than I think we are. But I see that, you know, League of Legends is a great example of what people consider to be a pretty fair model of free-to-play in kind of core gaming. And that's the kind of model that we want to imitate, and that's the audience that we're going for. And I think that we've achieved that with our free-to-play model. But it was, from the beginning, it was always our intent to make it free-to-play.
Among our readers, at least, who definitely tend to skew a lot more hardcore, and when I say our readers, I also mean our listeners, there is a lot of anger toward the free-to-play model, and there is a perception that it automatically skews the game's balance. And, I mean, you look at a game, I'll just use Star Trek Online as an example, which has a somewhat similar model to where you are, only you can't unlock the starships. Just you can unlock all the starships just by playing, but it takes a long time. A lot of those starships are really, really good, but you know, they're kept behind a paywall, and so that skews the progression, it skews the balance of the game. How do you react to that kind of perception? Is it unfair?
Yeah, well, we want to stay away from that. Mm-hmm. You know, that We purposely didn't want to sell power, and that is the most controversial thing that I think that free-to-play players feel Like, it's unjustified, which, by the way, is the opposite of the way that they feel in Asia. But the
if you don't mind me editorializing, I find energy the most insane, insane trend in the industry that I've ever seen, because it interrupts the gameplay loop. I want to keep playing and I cannot.
How
and
it saying, works?
Insert coin to continue, and I'm like, I'm not going to insert coin to continue. Sorry.
Yeah, it sort of baffles me too. But the even when I play an energy game, I never pay to refill my energy bar unless they give me something for free to refill it. But yeah, the point is that, you know, we wanted to avoid selling power. I mean, inevitably, if you were going to sell something, you can either sell cosmetic items, which is one of the things that we sell. The costumes don't do anything for your stats. They're just a different skin for your character. Sometimes they're more elaborate. They'll have different visual effects or different voice. You know, some of them will change gender. We'll have, you know, Ghost Rider and then Alejandra Blaze as a costume that you know, things like that. So, but that's not really selling power. That's just, you know, a different look and voiceover and things like that. You could, I guess, make some kind of claim that you know, we're selling heroes and that is, you know, selling power. But it doesn't really take that long to actually earn the heroes. So I think there is that balance, and you have to get that balance correct. And you can't make it so that the best items in the game are the most expensive or take the longest to get to. Or else you get that perception. And so we really try to be very careful about what we sell. We don't want to sell, you know, we don't want to go away with, oh, we're selling unique items or things like that. We don't want to go down that kind of path where you buying equipment or whatever. That just leads to all sorts of bad feelings in the community, in my opinion. And so we've really avoided that. And really the only things that you can buy, you can buy little boosts to increase your odds on some stuff, or increase your experience rate, your leveling rate, and then cosmetic items, and then the heroes. But again, the heroes can be earned through play.
How much editorial control does Marvel exercise over the content that goes into Marvel Heroes? Are you relatively independent?
Yeah, I mean, we are. They have to see and approve pretty much everything. But from a games systems standpoint, they have almost nothing that they say or do on any of it. You know, they don't comment on some particular unique items or, you know, we're going to add this particular item slot to all the characters, or, you know, they don't go into any of that. But anything that is, you know, kind of the visual look of any of the characters, what we're naming them, any kind of the text or flavor text that goes along in the dialogue of things that they want to say, that kind of stuff does need to be run by them. But 99% of that stuff is just approved without any real problem. Sometimes they'll come back and say, oh, you know, the buckle on those pants is not big enough, or, you know, the shoes are the wrong color or whatever, you know, whatever it is. They'll make little comments here and there, but oftentimes most of it just goes through without any problems at all. So they've been really easy to work with. They approve almost everything rapidly, and we've never really had any kind of major issues. There's been sometimes we have delays in things that we want to do because sometimes the rights on a particular character are pretty complicated, and so we get into, you know, the inner kind of politics. We stumble upon the politics of inside Marvel and what's going on with some of their stuff and the way that they handle all of their IP. But usually those are the only times. And sometimes it's also a little bit more difficult to get cinematic stuff, you know, that because it has to go through not only the Marvel group, but also the cinematic group. And everybody has, you know, weighs in a little bit more in their particular about when things come out and whatnot. So if we're tying into something into a movie, it makes it a little bit more difficult. But for the most part, it's quite easy and straightforward. And we have pretty much full control over what we want to do in the game.
Any good Stan Lee stories?
Well, I mean, he's in. We recorded his voice. He did some voice recording with him, and met him and got to hang out with him for the afternoon. We originally wanted him to recap and say all this dialogue, and we realized that was just not going to be possible. I mean, he's so wonderful, and you know, I just wish that I could be as old as he is, in such amazing shape, and really just so full of life. And so it just walking around with him is really amazing. And you know, I've seen him at conventions, and I've been in, you know, on panels with him and things like that. And it's such a treat to be around him, and the way that people act and react to him and stuff is just amazing.
What, 90 years old and still going?
Yeah, exactly. It's incredible.
I think we all wish that we could do that.
Yeah.
What do you got planned for Avengers 2?
We have a whole bunch of stuff coming up for Avengers 2. We've got some costumes for, you know, new costumes for all the characters. You're going to be able to start the game as any of the Avengers, including Iron Man, is one of the free guys that you can start with. We have a new we have Vision is going to be our hero this month, as part of the movie. And he'll have both kind of his movie look and comics look. Then we have Scarlet Witch is getting her review, so she's getting kind of updated with some new powers and things like that. Hawkeye, as well as Black Widow, are also getting a little kind of small upgrade, mini upgrade. Then we have a new game mode, an Age of Ultron game mode, where you take on Ultron and his drones. And that's kind of a brand new end game mode for you know, you and your friends or whatever, to kind of queue up and play and fight Ultron. So once you get to the level cap, that'll be something that you can do. So I think there's more. I'm forgetting. Oh, Quicksilver is coming soon as a team up. That'll be maybe not the exact day and date of the movie, but right around there. So a lot of things that are going in that will tie into the movie, the actual content in the game. Oh, we also have some Ultron modes that are going to be Ultron waves and all sorts of different modes in the game as well. They'll, you know, kind of Ultron will permeate the entire game.
So from Diablo all the way to Marvel Heroes, how has your kind of understanding of the genre evolved?
I mean, it's changed a lot. So, you know, I played a ton of Moria, Rogue, Angband, NetHack in college and earlier. And so I already was in love with, you know, roguelike games. And then so when we set out to make Diablo, it was, hey, I would love to make a modern version of those kind of games, because I played endless hours of those games. You know, I loved kind of the captivating parts of that, right? You know, the randomness and the unexpected, and how there can't be a set pattern, and I can play it over and over again. And those were important things to me. And I think a lot of that core still exists today. You know, delivering it in a different way has been great this time. With Marvel Heroes, I was able to make, you know, an MMO version of an action RPG, which I had not done before, really. It was, you know, Diablo was mainly designed and was a single player game up until 6 months before we launched, and we invented Battle.net, and said, oh, we got this great idea, let's make it multiplayer, and then we can play over the internet. What's this internet thing? Well, I mean, I knew what the internet was, because I had it in college, but it was very, very different then, right? So as all the universities were hooked up to each other. You know, we wanted to make that, and then Diablo, and then we, oh, it's got to be client server or there's going to be rampant cheating. So that's what we did, set out with Diablo 2. We're going to make this kind of client server model. But one of the things that we wanted to try when we made Diablo 2 was we would really like to make this thing called BattleNet Town. And so you would kind of come into the world and you'd be in town and there'd be other people hanging out in town. And then you would go off into your private game and then with you and your buddies or whatever. And you would all play through the game normally, but just as this kind of private group. But then, you know, EverQuest came out and got these open world things. And so the next step for me was I want to make a more MMO social experience to action RPGs. And that's really, you know, was the basis for a game that actually, a game I was working on at Flagship called Mythos. We were going to do this. It never saw the light of day. But then, and in fact, Diablo 3, this was originally the design to make it a kind of MMO type of game. And so finally here, I was able to do it with Marvel Heroes. And I'm really glad it creates a much different experience, I think, than you get out of other. And there were new challenges, design challenges, ways that we had to do loot, like all sorts of things that we never had to do. We had to change some of the ways that we did things. So I think that there's been an evolve. And then at the same time, so that's kind of how we evolved, or I evolved. But there's been different directions that the genre's gone into, like Borderlands and the way that they handle their random items and stuff like that. Or, action RPG means so much more now. I mean, many people consider things like Neverwinter Nights Online to be an action RPG because it's an action-oriented role-playing game. Whether or not that's a roguelike game or a roguelike action RPG, I wouldn't consider it to be that. But I try to stick with kind of that still roguelike underling, even in Marvel Heroes, where we have random levels and random items and random placement of bosses and even random quests and all sorts of stuff, and keeping that randomness alive to keep it fresh. That's really important to me.
When you started Blizzard North, it was you, Eric Schaefer, Max Schaefer. What was that like? Can you like put us in that period of time?
Yeah, it was three young dudes with computers and $10,000 to their name. It was and just, you know, complete. We had no idea what we were doing and no idea what we were getting into. We had met a few years before. I was working very briefly at this company, a clip art company. The company was a clip art company. They had made a bunch of stuff and put them on CDs, and then they over manufactured the CDs, and they needed to. You know, they had boxes and boxes of these CDs just sitting in their offices, and they couldn't sell them. And Max and Eric were two of the artists there. And then they said, "Oh, let's their family knew the Tremils, who owned Atari at the time, and they said, "Oh, we got a bunch of artists, but we need a programmer if we're going to make a game. What are we going to do with all these artists? Let's make a game." And so they hired me to be the programmer, and I met, you know, Max and Eric there, and we were working on this game, but the company went under, and so I left. And I think, like, I was recently married, and I've got to have a job, and so I left, and I went to a studio called Iguana, and I was the first employee at Iguana Entertainment, and it was founded by four or five other people, I was there for a little while, but they decided to move to Texas, and I didn't want to move to Texas. And so I called Max and Eric up, and I said, "You know, what are you guys up to? How do you feel? I made a bunch of connections working at Iguana. I think that I can get us some game contracts. I don't want to move to Texas. Do you guys want to start a studio? I think I can get us some work." And they're like, "Oh yeah, we aren't doing what we want to do, so that would be great." We kind of stayed in touch, you know. Even when I was at Iguana, they continued working on this other thing and tried to bring it to the consoles, tried to bring it to Super Nintendo, the game that we were working on, a transfer from Atari to console. And but they were looking to do something new, and so that was really how, you know, we started it. And so we got contracts to do game. I can't remember what our first game contracts were. There was a Justice League Task Force, so a DC game actually. Using the DC superheroes to make a fighting game that we called Justice League Task Force on the Genesis, and that was our first game.
You can't get away from comics, can you?
No, I can't. Well, you know, I love comics, so that was.
Sure.
But that was, you know, this was all. Yeah. So it was on the Genesis, which should date me. But the so this was, and we got, and so that was really how we started the company, was getting that game contract, and we also got game contracts to do. Some football games and on the Game Boy and the Game Gear at the time. And so that's really with those, we were able to hire some employees and whatnot. And then through the creation of the Justice League Task Force, before E3 existed, gamers would show their games off at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. And so it was in Chicago as well, but we go to the Vegas one, and we were showing off our Justice League Task Force game on the Genesis, and we get to the booth, and it's all set up or whatever at the publisher. The publisher was a company called Sunsoft, and we get there, and oh my God, there's a Super Nintendo version of the game some other developers make, and we never had talked. We never knew that there was another version of this thing. And we're like, wait, that's really weird. And so we kind of got to know them pretty well. And the games were strangely similar.
Well, how many different directions can you go with a Justice League fighting game?
Yeah. And so we got to kind of know them. And they said, oh, we're making our first PC game. And we're like, oh, we would love to make a PC game. And so we went to go look at their PC game, and they had this little kind of office rickety, you know, it was like the little metal walls, a 10 by 10 little box on the floor that they had set up in to they were showing press or anybody that they could get to look at the thing. And so we went in there and took a look, and oh man, this game looks great. You know, we're really interested in making PC games. That's really where our passion is. That's what we play the most. And we would really like to make more PC stuff. And, we got a great PC game idea. And so they said, oh, well, after we're done with this, then maybe we'll come out and hear your PC game idea. So the game that we went to see was Warcraft 1, and they were Silicon and Synapse at the time, but you know, became Blizzard, changed their name to Blizzard, and then right after they finished Warcraft 1, they came out and we pitched them Diablo, and that's really how the company evolved.
Such a different time. I mean, in
yes.
those days. So I talk a lot to Jeff Green, who was in the press at that time.
I know him well.
He talks to me. He tells me a lot about how there was a real bias against real-time strategy or real-time almost anything in those days. Like the old-school press who had been playing games and covering games since the 80s just said strategy games are turn-based, and that's how it is. I mean, was that kind of the same with RPGs at that time, PC RPGs?
Oh, God, yeah. 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 I mean, Diablo is really, as far as I know, the first kind of real-time action-oriented RPG, you know. So Dune 2000 was technically, I think, the first RTS, but Warcraft 1, you know, they definitely, it was right on the heels of that. And then, you know, Westwood went on to go make Command & Conquer after Dune 2000. You know, that was kind of the philosophy. Originally, Diablo was turn-based. When we pitched it, it was a turn-based game. And then after talking about it for a while and debating it heavily, and I was heavily against it, we said, all right, well, we debated probably for 6 months. People were suggesting, hey, we should make this thing real-time. I'm like, It's going to ruin everything that is the essence of the game.
It's going to make it twitchy, and it's going to take away the strategy, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And I love having, oh my God, if I make this decision, I might die. I've got this monster in front of me. What of these 17 things can I do? Should I attack it? Should I run away? Should I quaff this potion that I'm not even sure what's inside of it? You know, it's like, what do I do? It's kind of a desperate situation. And if I die, my character's deleted and my hands are sweating. And it's like, oh my God, I've spent like 20 hours on this character. And I don't, anyway, I love that tension. And I was like, but the real time, it's just not, you can't make these decisions in real time. You're taking away all the tension. So we debated and debated and debated and debated and debated to death. And so eventually I convinced everybody that, oh, it's going to take forever to do this, to change it to real time. We're going to need extra money to do this. And, you know, it's like, because Diablo was a work for hire project or whatever. It was not, we weren't part of Blizzard then. This was before, about a year into making Diablo, then we became Blizzard North. We were Condor at the time. And so it's going to take forever. We're going to need more money. It's going to take, at least a month, maybe 2 months delay on this project or whatever. And I'm not even sure if it's going to work out, but I agree that we will at least mock it up to see what it's like.
And it all worked out.
And it all worked out. And I still, even today, I can remember, the day that I coded it up in an afternoon.
It's going to take forever, but I coded it up.
Exactly. And I can still remember the very first time that I clicked on on a skeleton, and I was the fighter, and I went over there and I clubbed the skeleton and it shattered on the ground. And it was like, the heavens split and the ray of light came down in my office, and the angels went, ah, it was oh my God, this is amazing. And that was really the kind of the birth of the action RPG was kind of at that moment. It was really, I can remember like it was yesterday. It was amazing.
You and Max and Eric moved on, and Bill Roper moved on to Flagship Studios. And I don't mean to delve too hard and too deeply into what's probably a difficult time, but it's been almost a decade now since Flagship closed shop. Can you want to like do a quick eulogy for it?
Sure, yeah. No, I don't mind talking about it at all. I'm really proud of the stuff that we did there.
Mm-hmm. Quick eulogy?
Sure. When we went out and started our own company again, something that we had not done in a long time, and we were afforded many luxuries that were that the reality of the way that the games industry had changed, and I think that we were naive in the way that we handled a lot of the situations, just simply because we had become Blizzard, this giant company that could afford to cancel things and delay things and put it out when we wanted to, because we were making enough money to do those kind of things. And the reality of starting a brand new shop, doing a AAA game, the amount of money it costs, really getting the support you need, and the amount of time and energy it takes to do all of those things were beyond our comprehension at that point. And I think that as we went along, we understood more and more about how difficult this was going to be and what kind of situation we were in. And we also felt like, though, that we had had, at that point, we had kind of split ourselves really thin. Even though we had had a lot of different support from many different organizations, we then had 27 different masters, basically. And we had originally signed with Namco, but the people we signed with were all fired within 6 months of us getting there. And so then Namco wasn't really, they didn't even know what to do with us. They were still very supportive and they did everything that they were supposed to do, but they weren't going to publish the game. They didn't have a PC publishing business. So then we needed to get EA on board, and then we had a bunch of stuff with Microsoft and a special deal there, and we were doing DirectX 11 stuff for them, and Intel was doing some special stuff with them, and we ended up having like split ourselves amongst all these different things. In fact, we didn't have a platform because Namco was going to be making this platform that we were going to plug into. So then we had to create a second company to actually create this platform, and that was called Ping Zero, and they were upstairs in the same building, and that was a completely separate company. We need to hire new engineers and build that thing from scratch, and so it ended up being a much more difficult and much bigger project than we anticipated. Plus, the hype was sky high for the game. And in the end, I think that we made a good game. I think that it could have suffered from being released too early as well, even though it took us 5 years to do it. But I think that the premise of the game was a little bit of ahead of its time. Doing a first-person roguelike game was really kind of the pitch that I made to the team about what we were going to do, and everybody was on board. And I think that even, you know, Borderlands and some other games have kind of gone down that direction, and you know, everything has kind of gone a little bit. Shooters have merged into character classes and kind of RPG elements that didn't exist at the time, and so I think it was a little ahead of its time. So I'm really proud of what we accomplished there, but it was very difficult. I was trying to help run the company. I was still doing coding on the project. I did all the like collision in the game and coded a bunch of quests and all sorts of things like that. And I was trying to do design work, and you know, I was wearing three hats poorly instead of doing one thing well. And so that was one of the big changes that I made when I came here to Gazillion, was that I came in to be creative director, and then it was apparent that I needed to help work on the company. And then as more people on the board and et cetera saw my capabilities, you know, it became apparent that I needed somebody to do the creative directing job. I couldn't do that in the long term. I needed to actually run the company. And that's what I do now. I'm the CEO of the company, and I'm involved in Marvel Heroes, and I help do design and things like that, but I'm not implementing anything, and I'm not doing any coding, and I'm not doing the kind of things that I did in the past, where I did a lot of the work. In Diablo 1, I did a lot of the coding as well as design and things like that. So I've gone away from that direction and being more of focusing on the one job and doing it well. And that was the biggest lesson learned.
While you were doing all this, Blizzard was making Diablo 3, and you were, you were somewhat outspokenly critical about it. How do you feel about Diablo 3 these days?
Well, I think that they've improved Diablo 3 considerably. I think that it's a much better game than when it came out. They've fixed a lot of the problems that I personally would have. I would have gone a different direction than they did on. And I think that it's a much more enjoyable game. They've got a lot of things in there that people are really excited about, and constantly I hear nothing but good things and praise from a lot of people. I personally don't play it a whole bunch. I played the campaigns, you know, I played through the story. I'm focused on Marvel Heroes, so I don't really play it all that much. But I do hop in and see some of the new systems that they're coming up with, and kind of the direction that they're taking the game. And overall, I think that their story is kind of similar in some ways to Marvel Heroes, in that, you know, I don't think that Diablo 3 had the best reception of all time, and I think that now people consider it to be a good, very good game. And it's funny because people don't really remember this about Diablo 2, but Diablo 2 was the same way. Mm. When Diablo 2 came out, it was not super well received. And only after we came out, a year later, when we came out with the expansion and fixed a lot of the problems that people had with Diablo 2, then people, now, you know, in hindsight, people today don't remember the 1 year that was in there that was kind of a rough year for the game. It was still well received, but it was not like it was a lot of, I think most of our scores were lower than Diablo 1 from a critical standpoint. And so
people were unhappy about the bugs.
Yeah, people were unhappy about the bugs and all sorts of things like that. And so, and even some of the features that we had, and didn't like some of the depth and whatnot. So I think that, you know, going back now and you know, you're seeing through rose-colored glasses, and that people remember things how they are now, not maybe how they originally were. Even, you know, World of Warcraft had a really rough launch. You know, that this happens often in the industry, and some people are afforded more leash than others. But I think that at this point, Diablo 3 is a much better game than when it first released.
The funny thing about Diablo 3 is that it's partly a much better game because they more or less disavowed a lot of their original direction. They got rid of the auction house. They completely changed the way that they were. Well, they made loot a lot more plentiful and a lot more easy to get. And they put in an actual end game that didn't involve going through the same campaign over and over again. And then that's. Essentially, they went back to basics. They went back to the blueprint that you guys created with the game, and shockingly, it worked. People liked it.
I think that those changes did make a big difference, that's for sure.
And but with Marvel Heroes, like you guys kind of, it seems like you guys came in, you released maybe a little earlier than you wanted to, and you didn't so much disavow your original model as iterate on it, I suppose, or figure out what worked and then moved on.
I mean, we didn't have the time to make all of the things that we wanted. We didn't have difficulty levels. We didn't have, like, I mean, there was like all sorts of things that we didn't have in the game yet that made it, of things that we knew we wanted to make, but we just had not had the time to put them in. And so it came out thin, right? With basically almost no end game and very little options on how to get to 60 and things like that. So it was our problem was just kind of more of a lack of content than really but knowing that we wanted to actually where we wanted to go with the product and put these features in, and they were all planned, but we knew that it was going to take 6 to 6 months to a year to get all of that stuff in. And sure enough, a year later, it's a much better, or now even a year and a half later, it's a much better, much more robust game with a lot of content, a lot of things that you can do to get the level cap, and a lot of things to do at the level cap.
What's the future of Marvel Heroes?
Well, it's bright. We continue to grow. We're going to continue to add new features, new content, new heroes. We got a bunch of heroes coming up this year. There's Doctor Doom is our hero that you can play in June, and that we have the other Marvel movie coming out this summer. You can imagine where we're going with that, and then into the future, we've got some unified story stuff that we're going to be doing. We're going to make some improvements to PvP. We'd like to get in ladders. So there's a whole bunch of things in the future that I think that will continue to. One of the big things that we're going to be doing is this is the Danger Room, which is kind of a random map system thing. And I think that we're going to continue to add a bunch of features to the game, make it more and more robust, and make it more of a social experience. And we've got a bunch of improvements, actual technical improvements still coming to the game and whatnot. We're going to be adding more raids, all sorts of things. So more content, more fun things to do, and even more robust systems that will allow for eventually, in-game emails and all sorts of things like that make it a more MMO experience as well.
Where can I find your game?
At marvelheroes.com, just go to the website. You can register and download the game. It's all free, and that's the best way to get a hold of us. You can get to hold of us on, we have our Twitter at Marvel Heroes, and my personal Twitter account is at David Brevik, and we've got my Twitch. I stream the game about 4 nights a week or so, and I play with the community and I answer questions and do things like that. And you can find myself and my wife play together, and we use her Twitch account at the Jungle Queen as our Twitch stuff. So you can come join us and watch us, and we'll talk about the
Bracing yourself for the big influx of people that's bound to come with Avengers 2.
game. So, yes, we are. Winter is coming, kind of thing. We are. We have
All those white
beefed up our
walkers from
servers.
their mom's basement.
And Anyway, yes, we are getting prepared and we are ready for the influx and we're excited about it.
And if you want to follow me, I'm at @_catbot. Go to usgamer.net, read, review, and rate our podcast over on iTunes. And of course, follow everything US Gamer related on Twitch, on Twitter, on YouTube, and all of those fun social media channels. That would be usgamer.net. David Brevik, thanks for dropping by and dropping some interesting stories, and good luck.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And for the rest of you, happy adventuring.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.